right? For the entire evening, we're going to look at horary and event horoscopes. And that will be all that we do. And then next week, or the next time we meet, we will start looking at elections. There are probably only 3 or maybe 4 meetings left of this class, and then you'll know everything that there is to know that's important about horary, ephemeral, and electional astrology. I couldn't find examples of all of the things that we've been speaking of. There's a whole bunch up there. And so some of these examples are a little bit sparse. Now, the first set of horoscopes are to show charts which are unanswerable. And 3 of the first 4 charts are the same question. 1A, 1B, 1C, and 1D are all the same question. And that question was, why can't I sleep? This is somebody that was suffering from horrible insomnia. Let's look at number 1A. The has several really interesting things in it. The ascendant and the planets in the first house indicate the querent. As for that matter, then, Neptune and Uranus indicate the querent. The ruler of the cusp, it's Pisces on the ascendant, and you have a choice between it being Jupiter or Neptune or both. So Jupiter is a co-ruler until we get things sorted out. Now, since this is the psychological question, it seems much more likely that Neptune would be the co-ruler, and that's what you would want to look to first. Now, when you look at Neptune, you see something very curious. You see that Neptune and Uranus are in mutual reception, and that indicates that there's some kind of syndrome that just keeps rolling on, and one stimulates the other, and the other stimulates the first one, and so on. It keeps on going. And since it's all between air and water, especially with Pisces on the ascendant, it indicates that the person asking the question is in some kind of a psychological fog, which is exactly what it turned out to be. Now, according to traditional horary, Jupiter should be the ruler, but we're saying that Neptune is it. And with Neptune in the 12th, this is telling us that the person asking the question is deeply hidden. One does not know what to say because it's hidden. Venus is applying to Neptune, so loving support at least is on the way. And if it is a financial problem, financial support is on the way, or at least financial activities are on the way. Now, the agent, that is the astrologer, is indicated by the 7th house, which is Virgo. So Mercury and Saturn indicate the agent. Mercury is passing away from a trine to Saturn, and its next aspect is a conjunction to Jupiter. And so that sort of tells you the state of the agent in this. Jupiter is the junior ruler of the querent, so the agent is seen as a friend, and the impending conjunction promises that there will be help from the agent. All of this turns out to be true. However, that promise can't be fulfilled immediately, or at least not in this question, because Saturn in the 7th house, and when Saturn is in the 7th house, it usually means that a question is not answerable. And it means that the agent is blocked. And the funny thing is that the most likely source of blockage is the querent. There is no third party in this question. There is no quesited in this personal question. The moon is the co-ruler of the horoscope. And it's passing away from a sextile to Neptune, and it's moving toward a conjunction with Mars. Yes?
Why is moon co-ruler of the horoscope?
The moon is always a co-ruler of every horary horoscope.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time, because it's the planet of the moment. The fleeting quality of time is indicated by it. So this seems to indicate that things are passing from a state of psychological protection to a time of clash. That from passing from Neptune sextile to the Mars conjunction looks like clashing. And it's most likely that the clashing is going to be over profession, but that was not discussed in the interview with the agent. I didn't want to proceed any further as the agent, and that's all the further I went with the horoscope. The next day, after the interview with this question, the agent left town for 2 months. I went to South America. And then 1B, after the agent had returned from his long voyage, it seems that the person was still unable to sleep, and the person is very persistent, and he asks the same question again. Why am I unable to sleep? And again, in a different way, Uranus and Neptune rule the querent. In this case, Uranus rules the ascendant, and Neptune is conjoined to the ascendant. So we can see it's just past the new moon in Pisces. In all of the Uranus-Neptune, we can see that this is very psychologically complicated. Yes?
Can you ask the same question twice?
Yes, if something has changed, if there's been a long amount of time or something significant has changed.
What would be a little more time?
You just have to play it by ear. But in this case, it was a persistent situation, and I have the natal horoscope of the querent, but nothing was really showing, or at least I didn't know how to interpret what was showing, and it should not have indicated inability to sleep. But there were a lot of things I didn't understand. Now there's a lot of planets in the 12th house, which indicates, including the co-ruler, which indicates that there is, plenty of stuff that's hidden yet that you don't know. One really never can figure out in that. In this case, Mercury, who represents the agent, is separating from a conjunction of Venus and Jupiter. From a conjunction of Venus, and it's applying to the sextile, separating from the conjunction of Jupiter, and it's applying to the sextile with Venus. So it seems to indicate that for the querent, being Jupiter, that maybe some of the protection is wearing off, at least in the eyes of the agent. The Mercury is applying to a conjunction of Mars. And this says that as far as the agent is concerned, it looks like there is still a clash pending, but it is unknown. However, this time, the Sun and Saturn are more likely to rule the agent in Mercury. There is no real hangover with Mercury. And the Sun is just past the new moon. And this means that you know, the agent had just returned from a long trip, that something had just happened in the agent's life. Now, the next aspect of the moon after the new moon is the opposition to Saturn, which looks like the agent has his own clash, and since it's in the first house, the querent has his own clash coming up, and it's likely with the partner. Yes?
Why is the querent Jupiter?
I'm sorry. Yeah, it disposes all the planets in the first house. It's really not. I said that was a hangover from the previous question. So you can do that between questions. You can hang things over. All right. Was the querent in 1A, and it hangs over into the next chart.
And that's why you say Mercury can't answer the agent, because from the first question, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hangover also from the first question. See, this everything is referred from the first question.
But then if Saturn is there, then it can't be answered.
That's right. That's what the next line in the notes was. I again declined, much to the chagrin of the querent. I declined to go any further because I didn't want to deal with something that was blocked. And the querent did not like that at all. And the agent began to feel inadequate because I wasn't able to really help the person. So we go to horoscope number 1C. You can see the agent again spent, querent again spent a couple months' time before asking the question. So well, he was duly instructed that something had to change, or that an amount of time had to have transpired before he could ask the question again.
I know what it's like not to be
honest. Yes, yes. And it's the same question, only this time the tables are turned from the first questions. Because this, you know, the agent figured, well, I'm going to ask the question late in the afternoon this time. And this time Saturn and Virgo are in the ascendant. And it's just past the opposition from the moon. This has the querent looking like, this horoscope, the querent looks like a classic worried, nervous, anxious man who can't sleep. And that's so. So in the first questions, it looked like something psychological on the part of the querent. And now the querent is just plain worried. Mercury co-rules the querent, and it's in Taurus. And so it's a concern probably about material things and the philosophy about material things is what's involved. This I understand after the fact. Mercury is in a complex aspect pattern. It's coming out of a square to Neptune, coming out of a square to the Neptune-Jupiter conjunction. And that's in the sixth house. So, what?
It's going into.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. All right. It has to do with his health. First, the thing is, at this point, the querent is submitted to taking various kinds of drugs. First, drugs for sleep. But they turned ineffective, turned out to be ineffective. And eventually they became very heavy psychotropic drugs, which did allow him to sleep, but which he was very unhappy about, because there are difficulties. It turns out that the querent is from a family that in which there is a history of mental illness. Mercury is also applying to a sextile of the moon, which is moving to a conjunction with Uranus. So we can see that the person asking the question is submitting to drugs for his health. It's not liking the drugs. They're unpleasant. But at the same time, there's applying to the sextile with the moon in Uranus in the seventh house, which indicates that the person is more willing to talk to the agent. In this case, all of those Pisces planets are in the seventh house. So even though the question is blocked, the agent was much more curious about what was going on after three questions. If a person asks you a serious question three times, you begin to wonder what's going on, and you question the whole psychology of it, and it really pressed me very hard.
Question?
Yes.
Why is the question blocked in this chart?
Saturn is in the first house. If Saturn is in the first or seventh house in that tableau of blocking things, Saturn in the first or seventh house indicates the question can't be answered. So the agent started to become compassionate, and he started to feel that maybe he's been too cold in abruptly cutting off the earlier questions because they were strictured, and he didn't want to go to that. And what happened is that the agent was more sensitive and more compassionate, and hence more psychic, and was able to discern that the worry that the person had was for his partners. He was a partner in a large business, a national business, and he was concerned for his partners. And to which all of this was agreed to. And the agent, myself, began to ask whether this was because of poor performance, because of lack of sleep. And the querent said yes, but that there was more to it than that. The querent agreed, especially about concern for the partners, but that's as far as things went, because things were blocked again, and we had a little bit better communication, but not enough to really get at the matter.
What signifies the partners?
Seventh house.
Everything is.
Yep. At least from the point of view of the querent. Now, in fact, we're going to see some surprising cases of how a house means several different things. And I got fooled on all of those things, on a lot of those things. All right, finally, we come to 1D, which is the same thing. Why can I not sleep? Now, in 1D, it's close to being an unanswerable question, because the last 4 degrees of a sign are rising, which means it's almost too late to consider it. It means something like, this question is answerable, but it's too late to do anything about it. Again, Virgo is on the ascendant, and Scorpio is on the ascendant, and the two rulers are Mars and Pluto, and they're just past a mutual square with each other. Mars would be the applying planet, and it is separating, so it's just past that. Venus is applying to a square of Pluto, and first, it applies to a square Pluto first, and then it comes to a conjunction with Mars. Mars, Venus, and Uranus are in the fourth house, and they are all in patterns which point to guilt or mental troublement. For the Mars, Pluto is clearly guilt, and Venus Pluto can also be, especially with Scorpio rising, which is the sign that is most likely to have guilt complexes. So it's becoming clear that the problems are guilt. Venus is for the agent, and she rules the 11th. So the agent is again in the role of friend, at least as much as in the role of agent. And Venus is pending aspects to both planets representing the querent, so the querent is able to freely disburden himself to the agent. Pluto is in the second house, so it's all about money. And the last aspect of the moon is a square to Saturn. It's parting from the square of Saturn, and the next aspect is, and the square is in Mercurial signs. And from this it can be seen, the moon being in the seventh house, that the querent was involved in professional dishonesty with his partners. And so he has guilt over the dishonesty. All right. The last aspect of Mercury, who is also for the agent, is the square to Neptune. And this indicates his bewilderment and his disbelief. Like, it's like the agent was, I couldn't believe what had just been told to him. And if it had come to the agent intuitively that this was going on, the agent probably never would have believed it, because he knows the person so well that it seems so improbable that something like this could take place. There's a big lesson in this. It's very, very important to trust your intuition and not have any preconceptions. All right. The I had all kinds of preconception. To this day, because of that Neptune square, the planet indicating the agent, the agent doesn't know exactly what has transpired or exactly what the condition of the querent is. It doesn't, you know, it's very hard to get that information. If somebody is under psychological duress, they're taking psychotropic drugs, this means they're in pretty serious state. And if a person has guilt, with the guilt they're likely to magnify the seriousness of their condition. And so I really don't know what's going on. Clearly, the wife of the agent, of the querent tells me or has told me in the past not to believe all of what he has said, and that it's part of his psychological problems that he's saying as much as he's saying. But this horoscope indicates that his wife is in the dark also, and she doesn't know for sure what is going on.
Is she also Venus in this chart?
Yes. And much to my surprise, I thought she would fold when everything came up, but much to my surprise, she is being very, very faithful in this difficult situation. All right. This aspect also indicates my bewilderment, and to the agent, as far as he, to me, as the agent in this, it's very difficult to determine what's going on. I do not think that the activity was criminal, but it was certainly unethical. And the career and reputation of this person is ruined for life, and it's too late to recover it. Now, yeah.
Would criminality show in this thing?
Yes.
How?
If it were Mercury with Saturn in the square, that would be very likely a criminal activity. Criminality is possible, but it doesn't seem a lead pipe situation. And in talking about the situation, I talk to the querent probably once or twice a week just to help them get through the whole business. Now, I have unusual ideas about what's involved. And I haven't been able to tell the querent all of the things that I think, because the querent would not believe them and it wouldn't be ethical. First, there are the pending aspects of Venus to Pluto and Mars, which means that the querent must first be purged by guilt before being able to move on. Then there are the pending aspects of the moon. The moon trines Jupiter, then it squares Uranus, and then it trines Neptune. And this is the belief, not only from this, but from the natal chart of the querent, that there's going to be a rocky road ahead. There are going to be psychological ups and downs. And there are pending aspects. I believe out of all of this is going to be some kind of a psychological or religious conversion that takes place as the pressure wears off. The person might turn to religion, who has never really been a religious person in his entire life, might turn to that. In all of this, and there would be that kind of conversion experience, which would be a little bit rocky at first. And Mercury has pending sextiles to Venus and Mars, which probably mean a whole new way of life, about which nothing can be said, because Mercury, before it can make those aspects, has to pass over one of those cusps, and it's a no-no to say that for sure. The natal horoscope agrees with all of these possibilities, though the querent at this point doesn't believe that anything is possible, but that's where he's at right now. Now, I learned several important lessons in this that go beyond standard astrology. The first is to look at multiple meanings of the house, any house. In this case, it took me until the third question before it came to me and I understood that the person was concerned about the partners. That the Saturn in the seventh house in the first question indicated fear for the partners and not just the blockage of the person asking the question, to whom the question is asked. So when these sorts of things come up, be willing to look at many different meanings of the same house. And the second thing is to ask why there is persistence in a question, especially a serious question. And it came to me on the fourth question, why the question was asked again and again and again. Because the querent has amazing faith in me. Over the years, we've gone through all kinds of different things together. And he has amazing faith in me, and he kept asking me the question because he thought that in the answering of it, I was going to out him. And he wanted to be outed in that. And when it finally dawned on me, I just, then it was clear. And it shows, goes right back to the first meaning of Saturn in the seventh house again. It means that the agent is a dumbhead and, you know, didn't understand what was really being asked. The question was not just that question. The question was something else. Yes. He had been laboring under this, I guess, for years, and he wanted it to come out, and it was obvious that he couldn't continue on as he was anymore.
For you to be the taskmaster.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an honor.
Yeah.
I've outed people before, and it's a good thing. All right. This next horoscope is an event horoscope. It was the beginning of the first show of a radio show called Hermetic Dialogue, which was hosted by Richard Kepsel. The idea for the show was supposed to be that it was a call-in show. Yeah. Hila remembers those days.
You remember that?
Yeah. Each week there would be a different topic for the listeners to ask questions about or to make comments about. And I was supposed to respond. The Hermetic Dialogue comes from early forms of initiation. And before early forms of initiation, like, you were asked certain questions, and the ask and answer format determined whether you were proven ready for initiation. And I was really culturally out of it. I wanted to use Bach music for the introduction to the program, and they said that's too stodgy and everything else. Actually, as the show went on, any questions, not only on topic, but any question. And so what happened is I'd introduce the topic and I'd begin to talk on the topic and try to perk the interest of the people when they, you know, and get them all calling in. And the audience, now who are the people who turned on the radio are indicated by the first house. They are seeking entertainment or information, so they were the assertive ones. The host, who was offering things and was wanting to be responsive, was the seventh house. So Libra's on the ascendant, and Libra and Venus represent the audience. Venus is separating from a squared Pluto, and it's in the reserved sign of Capricorn. So that really gives an excellent description of the audience, which turned out to be mostly female. They were cultured, but they were shy and restrained and under the control of some kind of Plutonian hidden influence. Mars and Aries represent the person who was offering. They co-rule the seventh house, and Mars is in the bold and brazen sign. The relationship of Mars to of Gemini to Aries shows that the person was confident. In fact, Aries is a bold sign. And Jupiter conjoined the moon shows a lot of confidence. So the person offering the show was basically cocky and was positive. And that indicates, you know, I was really out there. Mars sextile to Jupiter shows even more pride. They're all positive qualities. But it was indicated that he was sure of himself and he was very willing to be outgoing. The Mars trines the Sun. It's almost partile. 1 minute away, so 1 degree away, so you can say that it is partile. And they're between eighth and fourth houses, which are hidden houses. And so the planets indicating the person offering the show was hidden in a studio. And the first house is the start of things. The seventh house is conditions along the way. The tenth house is the objective. And the fourth house is the denouement. Uranus is in the first. So the show was sort of an oddity to begin with. This is in very early days of Wart. Saturn is in the 10th house, saying that success in attaining the objective is not likely to be, it's not likely to be attained. Saturn is only lightly aspected, but it does square the moon and it is opposite to Mercury, so it just shut things down. Now, things along the way are indicated by the 7th house. And that's just the way it was. The host was expansive and daringly expansive, and I was rapid-fire prolix at the time. Moon just completed the conjunction with Jupiter, and its next aspect was a square to Mercury, which was also square to Jupiter. It was a second square, and we know from that how long-winded he can be. It's the same Jupiter square Mercury with the, not in the same signs, but the same positions of Mercury and Jupiter relative to each other that are in the person who's offering the show's natal horoscope. So we can see that there is a long drawn out speaking kind of thing. And that is exactly the way it turned out. And the talk was all interesting, but the audience was too shy to call and they didn't want to interrupt. So instead of turning out to be hermetic dialogue, it turned out to be hermetic monologue. The folly of it all. And the next day I would meet people on the street. They say, hey, that was a great show last night. I was really interested in it. And I begged people to call in and nobody would call in. Eli asked one question one time. And my friends, Robin and, a few other people called in once or twice. But that only lasted for a few months. Because there was no feedback. And there I sat and I didn't know what, I was just sitting in a room. And it's very hard to tell sitting in a room when you're trying to be on your toes and ad lib for 90 minutes. It's very hard to tell that you're in rapport with an audience because they don't feedback. So it became, impossible and he retired after just a few months. Okay.
The fact that Uranus is in the first house, doesn't that make it already an odd thing right off the
bat? Yeah, yeah. Okay. There were all kinds of odd things. One time I'm sitting in the studio and I'm talking away and the studio door opens up and this strange zombie-like woman comes walking in the studio. This was when the studio was on Winnebago Street and she had been prompted by people to come in and she said something related to absolutely nothing and I couldn't even engage her in a conversation over the so that there'd be something going on over the air. It was just one weird thing after another. It started when there was a very unusual man. I don't know if he's alive anymore. The last time I talked to him, I gave him a ride about a year and a half ago. One of the most colorful men in the city of Madison. His name was Robert Lynn. He's the one that ran for sheriff after he had been arrested for shooting at the police when they had tried to raid him for drugs. And he was always on crazy scams. And he was a very talented, very bright man. One of the most talented people that's gone through this city. But he just spent it all on drugs. And He would start relationships with welfare mothers, and he would live with the welfare mothers until the welfare would run out, and then he'd have a spat with them, and he'd move in with the next welfare mother. And it was just, and he had a radio show called, I think it was called Wednesday Night Free University. And this was an early wart, and all kinds of everything went on. And he said, on one of his free university, he had invited me in, and that's where the whole idea of the radio show came up. And I was on the air with him, and he, you know, people liked it, and so they suggested that I do a show. I remember Jerry Zeiger was the director, one of the directors of the radio station at that time. And Robert Lynn was doing this show one night, and he said, "I'm throwing it open now for anybody to call in." and first call comes in, he says, "Hello, Robert." And he says, "Hello." He says, "This is your ex-wife. I'm wondering why the child support payments haven't come in for 3 months." everything, anything went on that show. All right.
Yeah, he didn't go with one woman at a time.
No. He was a dog, but he was suffering. He was suffering from cancer.
Was he like a very charming person?
Yes, he could be. Libra. He was the number one student of the. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He was naturally talented. He was one of the only successful students. One of the only students that Aaron Borod, who was the artist in residence, would even take as a student because he was so talented. And he just, you know, blew it all. You wonder about things like that. All right. We're looking at 3A now, and it is, should I change work and take the profession offered to me? The question could not be, should I change profession, because the querent was not in a profession, but was in a different kind. It was in an occupation. She was the mother of three children and had only the kinds of jobs that could be considered occupations. Professions are the 10th house and occupations are the 6th house, whereas bread and butter jobs are the 2nd house. Now, the current state of things was either 2nd or 6th house, while the offer was for a profession. Now, this is a horoscope that has many endings and new beginnings. The querent is indicated by Aries, a sign that is eager to change. The querent was, by sun sign, a Taurus, and her basic character is not shown in the ascendant, but her state of consciousness at the time of the question was. She was eager for change. Mars is in Leo, showing her desire to vigorously want to move on and to take pride in herself. She was an army brat, and she was somewhat shown in that brassiness. The Venus is separating from a conjunction to Mars, indicating that separating from the relationship with the agent. Not necessarily, we did not have a romantic relationship, but that we were parting ways with each other. That's one of the things that's ending. The thing of it was that I loved this family together, and I did not want to see it break up. And the grounds for breaking it up did not seem justified. But I could have been wrong about that because you're not there every day. So the question was this was the last significant interaction that I had with the querent. The occupation of the querent had been mostly clerical as a secretary, which fits perfectly with the sixth house. Virgo on the cusp of the sixth house, and Mercury is the ruler of Virgo and the sixth house, and it is in the last degree of Cancer, which means another ending, that Mercury's ready to move on, that that this kind of occupation is about to be at its end. The moon is the co-ruler of every horary, and it's in Aquarius and the 11th house. The last aspect of the moon previous to the question is the square to Pluto. And Pluto is in the 7th house, which means that this is the end of the marriage. And Pluto is in Scorpio, indicating that there was a problem with alcohol. And there was, you know, it was going to end with great finality. The next aspect that the moon makes is in opposition to Mars, which signaled the end of an active friendship, which was with me. I was a little bit outspoken, even though I had to answer the question correctly. The moon is threatening a translation of light between Mars and Venus, but since it has not culminated with Mars, it's not certain whether that friendship could be saved. The profession is indicated by the 10th house. It was to run a publishing house. And publishing is indicated by the 9th house first, and secondly by the 5th house. Saturn, the ruler of the 10th, is in the 9th, right on the cusp of the 10th. And it's applying to a conjunction of Neptune, and the publishing house was a publishing house of spiritual books. Both are sextiling Pluto, which indicates a person of power who was making the offer. And it was an impersonal offer because there were no personal planets involved. All of these aspects are applying, which are sufficient to nullify any mind changing that could happen with the moon. So it was clearly a slam dunk, yes, do take this position. It's very much to a positive. The person did take the position, and it was the changing of her life. And, I've had contact with both her and with her ex-husband, and it was difficult for the children. I don't know what the status of the children is at this day. All right.
Richard, yes. Can you tell me, what would be the main indication of a yes in this case?
All of the applying aspects and everything about the profession itself being a positive. It's not so much the person, it's the position that is positive in this case. All right. This is the one that we've talked about a little bit before. It happened on a Sunday afternoon in 1970 when I lived in the building just on the other side of this wall. I received the phone call, and it said, "Is this the Mr. Kepsel who is a Rosicrucian?" And the man on the other end belonged to AMORC, but that didn't matter. The horary question was, where is my wife? Leo is rising, which would normally indicate a strong, hardy individual asking the question. The sun, the ruler of the ascendant is the sun, and it's in Aquarius, which is its detriment. That is its weakest sign position. The sun likes centralization, especially if the centralization is on itself. And Aquarius is too field-oriented or too spaced out, and it's not nuclear the way the sun would like it to be. So the person is in a bad place. The only aspect to the sun is a separating aspect, which could indicate a waning or broken relationship with his wife or somebody of his love, which is why he's asking about his wife. I asked him repeatedly about his relationship with his wife, and I never got an answer to it. The sun is in the seventh house, which indicates he's concerned about his wife and that things are probably not going well. And he's in a way probably dependent on her. That's the way it always is when you're the planet that indicates you is in the house that is ruled by the other person. And so she holds the cards. So either Saturn or Uranus or both indicate his wife. If it had been Saturn, Saturn is in the 10th house, and it would have indicated that she was with her parents. If it were Uranus, it would mean that she was with near relatives, the third house. Now, all of this is non-standard, but I was very intuitive at the time, and I used, I was a baby with horary astrology, and I just did everything that intuitively came to me. I said that that his wife is probably very far south, which I got from the Saturn in the southern sign and the southern house, and that the person was more likely with Uranus, was more likely Uranus, but that Uranus wasn't good for locating the person. And I said she was probably with a near relative like a brother or a sister. And he said, well, that's where she's supposed to be. She called me from Trinidad, which is where she was living with her sister. Now, separation and divorce can be a very disorienting experience. Sometimes if you're in a bad place, you don't want to admit your own fault. And it's much easier to blame. And he didn't want to blame his wife, because he wanted her back. And he was insecure because he was taking the separation very hard. And emotionally insecure people are often jealous. And these are all surmises that I came to because the person was not forthcoming about these things. Anyway, he blamed his troubles on his rivals. And his rivals were also the seventh house. And they were other African grad students. So he thought that he was being cuckolded by his rivals, and that call really didn't come from Trinidad, but it really came from across town where all of his rivals were copulating with his wife. Even though there was evidence to the contrary that this was not happening, this is the way he still saw things. This is a man that would have visions. He was an involuntary clairvoyant, and he had visions of her being, he knew which house she was in across town and just exactly what was going on. It was all graphic to him. I tried very much to convince him of his state of affairs, but it was little I could do. And tried to convince him that his wife really was there and that he was all right. And he decided that since he hadn't been sleeping hardly at all, he decided to get rest. Now, the moon is the co-ruler of any horary question. In this case, the moon is very close to culmination with Pluto. It's very close to culmination of an opposition to Pluto, which indicates that he's just about to run smack dab into trouble with power and authority. Incidentally, the Saturn in the 10th house is also opposite Jupiter, which indicates more problems with authority are in the air.
What was the last problem prior to this?
The moon opposite Pluto, which is the timekeeper. Saturn and Jupiter are not part of the question, but in the it just says that trouble of power is in the air, not immediately relevant to the question. The opposition of Saturn and Jupiter is in parental houses, and they indicated the trouble that was in the air was international. His family was in Biafra, which was being bombed at the time, and he was insecure about it. About a half an hour after he left, after the Hariri consultation, the agent received a phone call from him, and he was in the university hospital psych ward. He had gone to Madison General to check in for a rest. And that's something that you used to be able to do at one time, even here in the United States. But the hospital thought it was so strange that they sent him to the psych ward at UW. And he just, you know, feebly followed whatever was going on. And he was asked to sign papers for commitment for observation. And he asked the agent if he should do that. And the agent said, definitely not, because you're going to be in there for a long time and you'll regret it if you do. He did, which is not surprising, because he didn't trust seventh house figures, because he didn't want to be in their hands. Then why did he call me? But that's the kind of ambivalences that take place. The moon rules the 12th house and is in the 12th sign, so it's not surprising that he should end up being in a 12th house institution.
I have questions.
Yep.
Getting back to this, how did you determine that his wife was either...
His wife was either Saturn or Uranus.
How did you...
Psychologically, she was more like Uranus, but position-wise, she was more like Saturn, because they're the co-rulers of the seventh house cusp, which is not only the person. See, the seventh house has three meanings in here. That's one of the reasons I included this chart. The seventh house is the agent, and the seventh house is the marriage partner. The seventh house is the rivals. So all three of those meanings are for the seventh house. And so it was a big problem in the 12th house with power and control figures. What happened is several days later, he asked me to visit him in the hospital and to bring him some books, and I did. And he said, they tell me that I have more problems than I can imagine. I told him, You have not more problems than they can imagine. And what it was is there were meetings with the psychologist, and it was really funny. The psychologist was, just what you'd expect, some kind of power crazy moon opposite Pluto kind of person. And we were sitting there waiting for the Presbyterian minister to come. And while we're sitting there, a nurse walks by, and this man's name was Raymond. And he says, Raymond, wasn't that a pretty nurse that walked by? And Raymond said, I didn't notice. And then the psychiatrist says to him, don't you think it's unusual that you wouldn't notice a pretty girl walking by? And, you know, like, he's concerned about his family. He's concerned about his marriage and everything. Yeah, what? Psychiatrist. I don't think he's there anymore. I think he's retired by now. This is from 1970, so 40 years ago, and he was well in his prime already then. But what happened was, is eventually there was an agreement that the psychologist would let him go if he would agree to meet once a week with me, and once a week with the Episcopalian priest, and once a week with his African friends. And he wouldn't agree to that because he didn't want to be called a ding-a-ling by his African friends, and he didn't want to have to be reporting to them because he was already feeling he was losing face, so he didn't get let out. And the psychiatrist said to me, I think he's a dangerous paranoid. And I really don't want to let him go, but he had to because the time was running out. And so the the psychiatrist pulled the power play on him. He said, either you report as I want you to report and take these psychological medicines, or I'm going to send you back to Africa. And the guy went bizarre, and he got picked up. He was angry. He didn't threaten anybody, but he just picked up a chair and threw it, and it smashed the window. And the psychiatrist said, see, I told you he was a dangerous paranoid. I lost a lot of respect for psychiatry at that time. And eventually, the psychiatrist had to leave him out. And the poor guy was distraught, and he wanted to get to the consulate in either New York or probably Washington. He didn't have any money. He came to me for money, and I gave him money so that he could get the bus out of town. All right. Never heard another word from him again, but it was an interesting thing. This is a yes-no question, number 5A. Question is, am I pregnant? Virgo is on the ascendant, and that indicates the quarant. Mercury is the ruler of the ascendant, and it's in Aquarius retrograde. Mercury in Aquarius is a bit spacey, and especially when it's retrograde. So she probably never thought about birth control. Mercury's in the fifth house, which shows she's concerned about a child, but it's not enough to indicate that she's pregnant, not enough by itself alone. It could just mean that children were on her mind. Mercury in the fifth house shows that her activity, her primary activity, she was a school teacher. The moon is always the co-ruler of every horoscope. And the moon is, in this case, is in the positive sign Sagittarius. That's not enough on its own either to indicate a yes. However, the moon is in the middle of translating light between Mercury and the sun, which are in a double application conjunction. And this by itself would be enough to give a definite yes for one thing. Except there's one problem, and that is that the moon is impeded by a pending square to Jupiter, and Jupiter is not a collector of light between Mercury and the sun. The square indicates problems with the Pollyanna nature of the quarant, but it's not negative enough to quash the effects of the translation of light. So the answer is a resounding yes. Now, one thing should be clarified. If there were a child, it would be indicated by the cusp of the fifth, which is Saturn. And Saturn is in an ugly T-square with Mars and with Pluto. And the question was not about the child. The question was about the mother. And you have to be careful when you think of a question, you have to be accurate in that way. The question was, what is this child like that I'm carrying? Then you would look to Saturn and you would see trouble. But if the woman says, am I pregnant? That's a very different question. So you have to listen very carefully when questions are asked. Saturn did play into the business in that when there was a child, there was fighting that broke out between the quarant and the father. And I think it continued for the rest of the days. The child is now, as you can see, pretty old already. Saturn in the 10th house did delay the career aspirations that this person had. The child and several more children afterwards did keep her from her profession, but she finally persevered and got to her profession. All right, let's look at number 6. Isn't this fun? It's not so fun when you're staring at the sheet of paper. All right, this is another simple yes, no. With an opposition of a maybe. Number 6A. The question is, should I marry this woman? The answer should almost be an automatic yes if you have to ask somebody outside of you, but sometimes you need to be outed for what you really are. The Aquarius is for the person asking the question, and the Sun is for the quested, along with the planets in the seventh house. Now, some horologists use Saturn as the ruler of Aquarius just to be true to the rules of tradition, but they usually bring Uranus in a special way, and that's what we did in locating the woman in that previous question, like, where is my wife? We use both Saturn and Uranus, but each in a special way in locating by... I forgot to mention in there, Uranus was very distant, as was Saturn, was very distant from the Sun, which is why she had to have been a long way away and not close in town. All right, we can go ahead. Younger astrologers usually use only Uranus because they don't even know that Saturn has a classical rulership of Aquarius. I think it's best to not be stuck on either and to just keep yourself floating and not have any preconceptions about it. The best thing to do is see what fits first. In this case, I knew the querent very well, and there was no doubt that he was an oddball with all kinds of quirky usages of words, as you might expect with Mercury conjoined to Uranus. He even used words in weirder ways than I do. He was a man of many secrets, as you might guess. And he had a huge sex drive. At his death, 15 illegitimate children came forward, and there may even have been more than that. I know very little bit about the Quercetid, except that she was what is called in France a femme, meaning a very feminine woman. And that's exactly what you would expect with Venus conjoined the moon. Or Venus and the moon both in the seventh house. They're not conjoined. Sorry about that. So that described her reasonably well. And she was very positive about it, which was kind of unusual because he was a notorious lecher and philanderer, but she was still positive about it. The Sun, first significator of the potential wife, is also in the eighth house and in Libra. And it is applying, not in an orb, but it is applying to Uranus. And there's no cusp in between. And there's no intervening aspect in between. So you can say that this is applying. So you can say that there's something very positive between the two of these going on. There's no exterior aspect of in the moon being sextile to Uranus, but there is an exterior aspect of the moon's applying to Uranus, but it doesn't impede. So we can say then that the moon is applying to a sextile to Uranus and is actually translating light between the Sun and Uranus, which makes that application all the stronger. I had to say that it was all positive, all a go, because the horoscope says so. And I learned a big lesson in this, in that the marriage did work out. I was astounded by it. I think she didn't cast an eye on his dalliances. And they're clearly, I have the natal horoscopes, and they clearly were compatible with each other. And so this is a clear, irredoubtable yes. And much to my surprise, astrology was much better than my own opinion. That's about it.
Question?
Yep.
All right, so if the astrology was better than your own opinion,
yep,
what in this case would be the negative? Would it be the other dealing with... Would it be the Saturn that's...
There really are not any negatives in the chart at all.
What about the weight on the 8th house?
What?
The 8th house, wouldn't that denote like secret?
Yes, like yes. But it also means being willing to leave the secrets be secret. And I'm slowly being mildly convinced that the 8th house does have something to do with sex drive, opportunities for sexual expression. But not a lot. All right, the next one is for you. This is going to be a guessing game. The nature of the question is, I don't have notes anymore about what actually happened, so I'm as much in the dark as you are. And the nature of the question is, what was the cause of my miscarriage? Drugs, IUD, heredity, or what? All right. Do you have, what do you think is the cause of miscarriage in this horoscope and why?
Rising deals with material type stuff. Sixth house deals with the health or welfare, whatever.
Mars, Venus, and Uranus.
That's about as far as I can get at the moment.
That's a good start. It's a very excellent start. All right, let's. I'll give you my take on it, and do you want to offer something?
It looks like an abrupt thing.
All right. Taurus is rising, and Taurus is usually not feeble or weak or illness prone. It's usually a pretty strong rising sign. So you would think that the querent would be strong. Venus signifies the querent, and it's in detriment in Scorpio in the sixth house, which detracts a lot from that first look at things. Indicates that she might not be in a good place. This indicates that the querent has some kind of medical condition of some kind or another. Venus is conjoined to Uranus, which leads the speaker to believe that she had a hormonal condition. Venus Uranus together, especially dealing with the sixth house or the ascendant, in this case both, indicates hormonal problems. Venus is separating from a sextile to Saturn and applying to the conjunction of Uranus, indicating that she's passing from a stable state to a metastable state. Now, the fifth house is the house for the becoming child. I don't like using the word fetus. I like the becoming child instead. Leo is on the cusp, which is normally robust and healthy. The sun is self-deposited, but it doesn't ring any bells for me. But it is not self-disposed. It gets its disposition from Mercury, because it's in Virgo, and Virgo is a weak and complicated sign. The fifth house has two other planets in the north nodes, so it is a very complicated house and a very complicated matter. So it looks like there are complications with the pregnancy. The sun forms no Ptolemaic aspect, but it forms an almost exact in conjunct with the moon. And because it is so strong, it's just 2 minutes away, you have to consider it. And the in conjunct means complication. And the relationship of the complication is likely to be deathly, because the relationship between the sun and the moon is the same as the relationship between the seventh, between the ascendant and the eighth house. It is that kind of direction. So it indicates perhaps lethal complications. It is, in some ways, it's a mandalic in conjunct. Saturn is the first planet in the fifth house, and it's a planet of denial or obstruction, even death. Saturn has only the separating sextile with Venus, and so it's not very strong. Mercury is the second planet in the house, and Mercury is in its rulership and exaltation in Virgo. However, it forms an almost exact square to Neptune, which is the planet of drugs. And Neptune is in a sextile with Pluto, and this indicates that there is some fortification against drugs, even though there might be problems with drugs. Now, we can see from all of this that this is very, very difficult. We can see that she and the becoming baby are in a weakened condition, perhaps because of hormones. And it's a complicated matter, and drug complications may have been part of it. So let's try to get more clarification and information by distributing. So if you take the horoscope and turn it so that the fifth house is the ascendant, you're distributing then for the fetus, or the becoming child. If we do this, it shows that the becoming person is in itself weak. And that is more significant than the weakness for the mother, of all those Virgo Saturn things. Now, Uranus rules the cusp of the sixth. And again, there is that same Venus-Uranus sextile as there is in the crisis horoscope, also involving the sixth house. So we can see that the condition of the mother from the crisis chart is also part of the condition of the becoming child in the distributed chart. The Neptune factor may or may not be significant. That is the Mercury sextile to Neptune. It's hard to say. Something else becomes headlined in the distributed horoscope. Again, looking at the moon as the co-ruler of any question, in the distributed horoscope, it's in the house of death instead of in the house of destiny. The in conjunct seems to be all the more critical, indicating a pending or immediate death threat on the person. In the last aspect which the moon makes before the question is the inconjunct. And the next lunar aspect is an opposition to Mars, which will culminate before Mars leaves Libra. If it were to culminate when Mars was in Scorpio, it could indicate something like a miscarriage due to an acid condition of the uterus, which I have seen before. In this case, it makes causation from an IUD, which is sort of like stabbing, a possibility. It's hard to say. So when you synthesize these things all together, you can say that the becoming infant was weak and that the mother was weakened. That drugs contributed to complications and to the weakness and weakening. hormones contributed to the complications, but were probably not strong enough to be causal. Some kind of inflammation or irritation or action seems a likely lethal factor. Since Jupiter has a strong say in both the crisis and distributed horoscope with regard to the fourth house, and Jupiter is not really a problem, you can say that hereditary factors were not a likely thing. Yes.
What's interesting about this also, I mean, if one reads Message of the Stars, mm-hmm. it talks about the fact that if Saturn and the Sun are in the fifth house, it is likely that there'll be no childbirth or death of the child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that.
Yep. Yeah, but when we have an exact horoscope like this, we can be really specific about it. All right, that's all we have. Thank you very much. Yeah. Next, we have only 3 or 4 meetings left, depending on how ambitious I am. We now look at, in the next 3 meetings, we look at elections, 3 different kinds of elections. And if I'm really ambitious and can find the time, I might do a 4th hybrid type of election. And the electional astrology is more important than anything we've covered so far, because it deals with the future. And the future of astrology, the way astrology is going to be used in coming times, and the way it can be used intelligently. Questions?
It's too late. I've turned the thing off.
What do you have to say about a person casting horary charts for themselves? Is that advisable or not?
Yeah, I've done it. I almost included one here that I cast for myself when we bought the house, when my wife and I bought the house. It was, what's with this house?
What's with this house?
And in that case, then the seventh house would signify
the both the first and seventh house are for the quarant.
Okay.
Yeah. Or for the aging.